Football Weekly with James Richardson in association with SportingBet.com.
Football Weekly today. Triumph at Old Trafford. Good park header helps United enjoy afternoon. It's like a page from George Michael's diary. Pod compares Liverpool to well-tailored pair of trousers because they go down to defeat very regularly. Abroad, call him Leo Messiah as El Pulche clocks up another hat-trick. Sid Lowe's on the line with a Leo Love-In special. There's the latest from Italy, Brazil, your post, the Champions League draw, our salute to that night at Craven Cottage, and to Avram Grant's brave Portsmouth. Plus, we look forward to all the big midweek fixtures in today's Football Weekly. On board today, Fernando Duache.
Hello, James.
You're a father.
Oh, yeah.
5 days ago, baby Cecilia was born.
Baby Cecilia was born, you know, to the joy of the nation and the world.
Well, congratulations, Fernando.
Thanks.
Paolo Bandini.
Hello.
Baby-faced. And nice to have you on board. And Sean Careless Whisper Ingle.
Pardon?
Yes.
Hello.
You were the one who liked the whisper bars in last week. This is sort of a bit self-referential.
I remember my first whisper bar, by the way. It was Farr's Garden Centre, 1987. I think it was May.
How would you possibly remember that? Are you being serious?
No, I'm being serious. Yeah, completely.
Why do you remember that?
I just remember that. Is
there a girl involved?
No, I have a habit for remembering, sort of, joining the garden when people left.
Do you remember the first time we ever spoke? No, you're going to disappoint me now. I can't believe it. Showbiz, eh? All right, well, let's go straight on to Man United Liverpool. Well, this was the game that United's rivals, and especially Liverpool fans, thought was really going to, you know, make the difference. But disappointment for Liverpool. I have to say that United did get a little bit lucky in that that penalty was a bit controversial. And had Fernando Torres not scuffed horribly, well, especially that final chance, you know, this could have been a draw.
It could have been, but I think United certainly deserved to win, apart from the opening 10 minutes and that late chance you mentioned. I thought Liverpool were fairly poor. I was surprised by the decision-making by Rafa Benitez. We all know Gary Neville is susceptible to pace, and yet he plays Coit and Maxi, who, you know, have got absolutely nothing at all. Why not throw Babel on? And Babel, for all his faults, would have tested Neville. I think the other thing was Mascherano and Lucas, again, lacked creativity. And there doesn't seem much difference when you look at people like Fletcher and Park, but they just seem more energetic, more vibrant, more doggerel. And I thought United deserved the win.
I thought Kaut was actually one of the better players in the end, and that, you know, isn't necessarily saying that he was the right choice. But Maxi Rodriguez was, I think I barely saw him in the ninety whatever minutes of doing minute by minute commentary. I think I noticed him once when he took a tumble near midfield and started throwing a hissy fit because he hadn't been given a free kick, and that was pretty much his contribution to the game,
As well as getting bundled over. And perfect opportunity then for Benitez to take him off when he did get injured by whose boot was that came down at the back of his head? Neville.
It was Neville.
Yeah. But after a couple of redemptive wins for Liverpool against Portsmouth, against Lille, which featured the more creative talents of, say, Aquilani and Babel, you as a Liverpool fan, Fernando, must have been disappointed with Benitez's lineup. No, you were too busy with Cecilia, let's be frank.
No, but I watched a game with her. Basically, you know, balancing her on my left arm and, you know, sending V signs with my right side to Gary Neville, of all people.
Gerrard style.
Yeah. Right. You know, the referee didn't see it either. No, the thing is, this is a picture of Liverpool's season. They are on a very kind of a mad seesaw. There are two kids on ecstasy on a seesaw, something like that, just like jumping around. And it's a picture of a team who's very fractional, in my opinion. I think the Benitez lost the dressing room. And, you know,
you think he's lost the dressing room?
Oh, yeah, I have this impression from what I've been hearing in the airwaves.
All right, was it the gold shorts that did it? What? The gold shorts, is that what really drove a wedge between him and the team?
I don't think that's a problem.
Well, I have to say, watching that was one of the things that struck me. Wear gold shorts, but they have to be tighter. You can't wear loose, baggy gold shorts. You can't. Sorry, Sean.
No, I was just going to ask Fernando how Lucas is going down in Brazil, what they think of him, and is his reputation over there higher than it is over here?
His reputation in Brazil was high when he left. He won the silver ball offered by Placar, the biggest Brazilian football magazine. He was one of those guys that people say, okay, we should keep an eye on him, captain of the under-23 team. But he never actually blossomed to expectations. I think the move to Liverpool, obviously, he couldn't say no. But it wasn't the best he could have done in his career. He arrived in an environment where he needed a few more, perhaps a couple of seasons to settle, and he didn't have this time. A move might be the best thing for him in the future.
Because a lot of people seem to think that he is a great player who's kind of buried into the kind of morass of mediocrity in Liverpool's setup.
I don't think he's a great player. I think he can be a very useful player in terms of like being a second fiddle guy to help a lot in that midfield. But he's not a 40 classy for sure. That's my opinion, by the way.
All right. Well, a lot of people are getting excited about Man United's victory. There's obviously a major hurdle cleared. But they do still have the derby to come. From the point of view of the title race, Arsenal keep up with them with a victory over West Ham. Good result for Arsenal, despite playing with just 10 men after Vermaelen was harshly sent off, would you say, Paulo?
You have to send him off if you don't have to, but it is a red card offence if you think it's a foul. The contact was very light.
Is it? Hang on. Couldn't you just give him a yellow card unless he's the...
Again, it's a letter of the law against interpretation. I mean, letter of the law, he goes because he's the last man, but...
Was it a clear goal scoring opportunity?
Yeah. Well, I think...
Anyway, he got sent off. He's suspended just for one game, though.
Yeah, it's only one game because it was just a professional foul rather than violent conduct. I have to say, I mean, I think everyone at Arsenal is going to be very anxious about the idea of going to Birmingham, not especially...
That's their
comment on
fixture.
Birmingham, but just it's on Saturday.
Oh right, next Saturday.
But just going anywhere with your first choice centre half pairing now presumably going to be Campbell and Mikel Silvestre. But I do have to say that especially since I gave him a little bit of a ribbing the other day, Sol Campbell was excellent after the sending off, and actually so was Alex Song when he dropped back into centre half. Both of them I thought put on a really really solid display. And it'll be interesting to see if Wenger would put Song there actually to start ahead of Silvestre because he was better than Silvestre. But on the other hand, you lose Song from midfield, which is something you don't want to do.
Chelsea, though, dropping points in the race for the title. Well done to Blackburn, who roared back Rovers in the second half to earn a point, which left Ancelotti looking particularly glum. Trill3K tweeting in, saying, is Ancelotti unable to change games from the bench, which is really the mark, I think, of a good manager. Sean?
Possibly. I mean, I thought we should say, well done, Blackburn. I thought they played very well. They deserved their point. Mm-hmm. I think some interesting stats, myself and Mike Adamson, our football features editor, were looking at. Chelsea have already let in more goals at this point in the season than they've let at any point in the Abramovich era. They've lost 19 points from winning positions this season alone. During Jose Mourinho's two title-winning seasons, they lost 4 points from winning positions. So once they basically went to goal, 19 this season. And that says, that to me says that, you know, it's a mentality thing, it's the defending thing. Ancelotti hasn't got that team defending well enough.
Right, he's not firing them up.
Well, I think that mentality thing is bang on, because if you watch the game on Sunday, what happened was they basically dominated the first half, really. And then second half, Blackburn came out, tried some different things. They tried to work it down the wings more. They had a bit more energy. And Chelsea basically... I mean, they weren't exactly getting blown away, but they didn't respond at all until Blackburn had scored, at which point Chelsea absolutely steamrolled them for the last few minutes but couldn't get a goal. And you just think, well, where was that, you know, 10 minutes ago?
I'm sure you're not surprised about the situation, though, Paolo, knowing what you know about Carlo Ancelotti's record with Milan, where tactically he was brilliant, a lot of great innovations and a lovely chap, and handled brilliantly a delicate situation that existed with, you know, Berlusconi and his demands but lack of wherewithal in terms of actually going out and buying some new players. But the one characteristic that one of the characteristics that defined in a negative sense his time at Milan was the fact that his team would be flat on big occasions, and even in the middle of big occasions, vis-a-vis the final in Istanbul, or that terrible collapse against Deportivo.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's obviously very relaxed in his demeanour, and I think that transmits many times in a positive way. I mean, I think it means that certainly with his Milan teams, they... we're often a very even team. You wouldn't expect them to lose their composure in big moments, although they obviously did a bit in that final. But equally, he doesn't seem to know how to ramp them up when he never really, as you say, had that ability to really ramp them up when they needed ramping up. And I think maybe the same situation with Chelsea.
Fernando, is fourth place gone now, do you think, for Liverpool?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's been a very unpredictable league. Yeah, Spurs. I still haven't seen Spurs actually saying, OK, this is our place. No one's going to take it away from
us.
They
just went and won at Stoke, Fernando. What do you want from them?
No, I'm not criticising Spurs. I'm actually pretty happy to see them,
right,
you know, a great football, English football being doing stuff. But I still don't trust them to go all the way.
An interesting stat with Spurs is... on Saturday, it was only, they've played without Defoe and Aaron Lennon 18 times, and they've only won 5 of those matches. So I think Saturday was a significant result.
How long will Defoe be out?
Well, Harry Redknapp said several weeks, which is, you know, vague, but you would imagine that would take us up to at least towards the end of April.
Well, Spurs still 2 points clear of City in fourth place. City lying fifth with a game in hand. In fact, City and Villa have 2 games in hand over Liverpool, who are lying sixth. and one game in hand over Spurs. Spurs still have to face all of the top three, though, before the end of the season, which might be, you know, what you're saying.
Yeah. It was basically that. You can't. I don't think we can, you know, put the cards on the table now.
No. But,
thankfully, because it's been really exciting, as Glenn Hoddle said yesterday during the transmission. One thing about Ancelotti that I was thinking here, remember how that Milan team was also a team that could actually help him on the pitch? You had a lot of players who would actually rise up to the occasion in some situations. At least you had the core of that team dictating things around and showing some kind of like gelling, it said. I have the impression that this Chelsea team somehow is not the group that had fire in the belly in terms of being tight and unity, you know, like players actually being rowing on the same direction.
But they were a team with a lot of spirit. So when did it change? Why did it change?
I think a certain Jose Mourinho would probably say the moment he walked out the door, but there'd probably be plenty of people who disagree.
Well, under Hiddink, they were still a spirited bunch. Yeah, they competed. I mean, I have to say, as you've been pointing out, Fernando, it is a bit early to put those cards on the table. So Chelsea are 4 points behind, but they have a game in hand and they are going to play United before the end of the season. So if they win all their remaining games, they will be champions. It's in their own hands. And we'd look pretty silly if we write them off now and then Ancelotti cranks his eyebrow up an extra millimetre and whips them onto glory. So anyway, there you go. It's delicately poised. Let's leave it at that. Part one concludes thus. Part two will commence very, very shortly with a very excited Sid Lowe in Madrid.
Football Weekly from The Guardian in association with SportingBet.com.
How are you, Sid?
I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
I'm well. Listen, Leo Messi, he's done it again. No caveats. No, hang on a minute. He's the best in the world, isn't he?
He is absolutely sensational. Yeah, he really is. And I think in a way, and this is the thing I've been writing about today for The Guardian, I think in a way the fact that he's so consistently good has almost meant that he hasn't been given the credit that perhaps he occasionally deserves. Because, for example, last weekend he scored a hat-trick against Valencia and everybody kind of went, yeah, Messi got a hat-trick against Valencia. And he was scored an absolutely brilliant hat-trick against Valencia, but every week he seems to do something sensational. I think that means that the ridiculously good has become so routine that you almost overlook him. But last night he was just out of this world. It's a really astonishing performance. And there is talk now, and I must say, I don't think it's particularly over the top. There's talk now to suggest that he could well be amongst the best players ever, not just now.
Well, he's only 22.
Well, I think that in a way, is the most amazing thing about
it. Is he getting better? Because last night was amazing. Is there that feeling that he's reaching places now that previously he couldn't get to?
It's not so much that as I would say that I think he's always been able to get to these places. I think what maybe stymied him a little earlier in his career was that he had injuries in his first three seasons. He missed at least 10 games a season every time, but he was still playing brilliantly. That fantastic performance at Stamford Bridge, I think he was 17 when Asier Lallana kicked him about a bit. He went to the Santiago Bernabeu, a game that everybody remembers for the two brilliant goals from Ronaldinho, but that was his debut for Barcelona, and he was absolutely brilliant at the Bernabeu. And I think it's just injuries that have stopped him being the best over the last few years. Last year, he had an injury free season at last. He won the treble with Barcelona. He got a goal in the Champions League final, two goals in the game against Real Madrid, the 6-2, which effectively won in the league, a goal in the Copa del Rey final, a hat-trick against Atletico Madrid away in the Copa del Rey. And just think what he's producing is brilliant. So it's not so much a case, I think, of saying, well, he may become the best player in the world or one of the best players ever. It's that if he just even slightly maintains what he's doing now and manages to add to this what he's already done, because at 22, he's already won three league titles, two European Cups. That's more than Diego Maradona ever achieved. It's more than George Best ever achieved. But, of course, there's the question mark about the World Cup. Of course, there's a question mark about the World Cup. He's only 22. He's had one World Cup. Give him a chance.
Yeah. Give him a chance, Fernando.
Well, I'll give him a chance. I'll happily give him a chance. I think that if he keeps on this pace, Argentina actually have, again, to be considered something worthy of being favourites in this World Cup, even with all the mess Maradona has been causing in the team. But I think
Argentina have got the previous best player as coach. He's not much of a coach. That's the problem.
But don't think Messi still owes the Argentinian fans a bit more glare and fantastic performances with the white and blue shirt?
Well, it depends what you mean by owes them. And this is quite a difficult subject, I think. I mean, first of all, obviously, he's not surrounded by as good a side as he is at Barcelona. They don't play tactically in the same way. They've been a complete and utter shambles under Diego Maradona. But Messi more or less carried them to an Olympic gold medal. He carried them to a FIFA Youth World Cup. And he's just been struggling with Maradona in what...
But Sid, if he's as good as Maradona, he should be able to lift that team the way Maradona did. No?
Well, then let's give him the World Cup to find out, shall we?
Right,
they had a disastrous qualifying campaign. I must admit, off the top of my head, I couldn't tell you how Maradona performed in qualification for 1986. I don't know if he was he was particularly good. But Maradona, bear in mind, that was his second World Cup. What did Maradona do in 1982?
He got sent off
for stamping on the ghoulies of a Brazilian, didn't he? I think that's all he managed to achieve. So I think in that sense, you need, maybe need to give Messi the benefit of that. Also, say, let's talk about carrying the Argentinian side. There is a problem, according to some Argentinian mates of mine, and this is quite an interesting one. I don't know to what extent this is true, but there's a sense of partly in Argentina they don't rate Messi because he left Argentina so young. But there's a kind of nationalistic, patriotic question here, and the Argentinians that go on and achieve things abroad are not always given the credit that perhaps they deserve back home. And bizarrely enough, one of the examples I was given of this is Che Guevara, who's not seen as a particularly big hero in Argentina, although, of course, there may well be political reasons for that.
But I think
that plays a part in terms of the mental approach towards Leo Messi from Argentinians. But, yeah, let's give him this World Cup and see, and let's hope Argentina can play half decently and actually allow him to play well, because it is certainly true that he's surrounded by a very, very good side at Barcelona.
All right, well, listen, give us a quick sample of what the Catalan press are saying about him, and also, have they finally woken up to him in Madrid?
Well, I quite like this. Both Madrid dailies do have Leo Messi on the front cover, but before we say, wow, they are really giving Messi his due, the front cover of AS is Van der Vaart saying, yes, I touched the ball with my hand, but that doesn't make it handball. And then at the top, it does say there's a strap across the top of the paper that says Messi's from another world. So I suppose that's us giving him his dues. And to be fair to us, they've been quite good over the last couple of years of giving Barcelona a certain degree of credit when they've played well. And the editorial from the editor Alfredo Lelaña today is all about Messi as well. Marca's front cover, well, there's a little bit of Messi just down in the bottom corner. It's just super Messi. Scores 8 goals in a week. And that's the point, really. This isn't just about the Zaragoza game. This is about a player who's just consistently brilliant.
Right. Sid, Jordan Harper tweeting in saying, does La Liga flatter Messi and Barca, though, Sid? Unquestionably exceptional, but Zaragoza, for example, doesn't put up the same kind of fight as Blackburn, says Jordan Harper. What do you make of that?
Well, there is fight, and I think that's absolutely true. I think as well, for what it's worth, I think La Liga flatters anyone who's any good. I think right now the Spanish League has a real problem in terms of the strength in depth, in terms of the competitiveness of the league. Real Madrid and Barcelona are both record-breaking sides. They've got an 18-point lead over Valencia. So, yeah, that's true. But then we all fought this last year, and Messi was top scorer in the Champions League, the youngest ever top scorer in the Champions League. He scored 9 goals, twice as many as Cristiano Ronaldo, having taken half as many shots. He scored the winning goal in the World Club Championships. I think it's more than just La Liga. I think what we do have is a situation where the Spanish League is weak, but the team at the top of it is genuinely very,
very
strong.
Very, very strong. Yeah. I tell you what, you're on form as well today, aren't you, Sid? Take everything we throw at you and batting it right back. What's the Spanish press on drawing Arsenal in the Champions League for Barcelona?
Excitement, because they see Arsenal as the closest side to Barcelona in terms of style, in terms of approach. When I say excitement in the Spanish press, then obviously, as I'm sure you can imagine, talking really about the Catalan press, the Madrid press is sort of hoping the European Cup will go away. Although it's obviously going to do quite the reverse of going away. It's going to come to town on the 22nd of May, which will be pretty entertaining. There is a feeling that it's a very, very good tie. I think there's a recognition that Barcelona have got a tough draw, but at least they have the 2 second legs at home. I'm not actually sure how much of an advantage that is when you look at what happened this time around. Real Madrid went out with the second leg at home. Chelsea went out with the second leg at home, so maybe it's not quite as big of an advantage as all that. But yeah, they're excited, and they're excited as much as anything else for one reason probably above all, and that's Cesc Fabregas, to return him to Spain to play against Barcelona, which is going to be pretty tasty, I think.
Sid, I can just imagine Rob Smythe and Jonathan Wilson sitting on the sofa together looking at the pass percentages of Fabregas and Xavi, you know, topping 90% as ticky-tacky goes backwards and forwards.
There's going to be some messy finishes there as well, probably.
Let's hope they've got white, clean surfaces. It really is going to... I mean, this is the thing, as you say, it's about retention of the ball. It's about possession for both clubs. And also, of course, for the Spanish national team. This is one of the other things that perhaps shouldn't be overlooked, not just when we talk about Barcelona, but also when we talk about Leo Messi. which is that he's found the perfect club in which to play, and that's reflected in the fact that the Spanish national team is also very good. And I think in that sense you can't underestimate the role of Xavi Hernandez, who has probably been the key player that Barcelona have had in the last decade.
All right, well, as I say, the Champions League draw, which we mentioned there with Arsenal taking on Barcelona, and the other fixtures, because they're all very interesting. And it's very interesting all over Europe, really, the Europa League, Champions League, as you all know. Bayern Munich taking on Man United, and the winner of that meets the winner of Lyon and Bordeaux, that French, all-French affair. And then Inter taking on CSKA Moscow, and the winner of that takes on the winner of Arsenal, Barcelona. Fernando, which nation has the most players left in the competition?
It's France, isn't it?
You're right.
And Brazil in second place, if I'm not wrong.
France has 20 players, Brazil in second place with 9, England musters 5. France has the most coaches too, 3 of the last 8. Crikey. Plenty of posts. A lot of people posting on about the draw, which happened, of course, on Friday. A little bit old news, but very interesting. Just run through them very quickly. Damien, my dreams are haunted by the vision of Messi running at Campbell. Wonk, wouldn't the Barcelona-Arsenal match be better if we just gave each team a ball? Men call me Phil. Lyon against the side that took the league off them. Bordeaux, of course. Man United against the only team left with 2 great wingers. I guess the Champions League is getting interesting again because there are only 2 English sides left. And Blunt Guardian pointing out that Bayern have reacted to the trauma of having Man U in their Champions League path again, you know, 1999 and all that, by slumping to Eintracht Frankfurt this weekend with 2 very, very late goals, a la Solskjaer and whoever who scored the other one?
Sheringham.
Yeah. Now, I can't mention Europe without talking about that night at Craven Cottage. Very special evening when Fulham roared back from 3-1 down and then conceding an away goal early on, so what, 4-1 on aggregate, to put out the once mighty Juventus.
Juventus, though, Jimbo, were Cannavaro. I mean, when Bobby Zamora makes you like, like a has-been defender, Cannavaro was one of the great defenders.
No, he was.
And the whole
but
team
Zaccheroni
lacked,
dropped,
fight, didn't
the
they?
First thing Zaccheroni did when he came into Juventus was drop Cannavaro and Grosso, and the fact that he was back in was to do with the enormous number of injuries that and suspension, Legratalia, that Juve had. But, you know, even with all the various kind of allowances you can make, it was an extraordinary performance from Fulham.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was a fantastic performance from Fulham, and it was a woeful one from Juventus, and those two things came together to create, you know, this ridiculously unlikely comeback after Trezeguet's put Juventus ahead at the beginning, and you think, wow. I mean, I think at 2-1 and with Cannavaro's enough, I thought, can they really do this twice in one season? Because obviously this is a very similar situation to what they were with Bayern Munich.
Exactly
where
the same.
Well, I mean, against Munich, a loss by 1 goal was as bad as a loss by 3, whereas against Fulham, at least they thought they could lose 2-1, they'd still be fine. But no, they managed to pull it out. I mean, I just brought this up here because was vaguely interesting, the Italian press reaction. I mean, Tutto Sport, I remember going on their website the next morning, which is a Turin-based newspaper, and the front page just said in massive letters on it, "You should be ashamed." Actually, it's a bit confrontational when you load up a website if it tells you you should be ashamed. First thing
on it. Depends website, on what website you're looking at.
Well, yeah. Really, really angry reaction in Italy. I mean, the Il Giornale said, "Europa League nightmare, Juve choose suicide." It was self-destruction.
I think we should also say well done to Roy Hodgson. I think if England were to struggle in the World Cup and to get knocked out early and Fabio Capello for one reason or another was decide to go, Hodgson might now be the favourite to take over. Certainly if Fulham get past Wolfsburg in the next round, I think he'd have a very strong chance.
We're just talking about Hodgson with James the way up, but Hodgson I saw afterwards said, "I've really tried to like Juventus, but I still can't. This win means so much more." So he obviously absolutely loved it, but he's done a fantastic job. I mean, he's a very good manager, I think. Mm. But he said he'd quite like to see Odio going back to Serie A. So I'd be interested to see if at the end of this season someone doesn't have an interest.
Juve, perhaps. They're certainly going to be in the market for a manager. I think they've made that absolutely clear. Yeah. Sven Skohones, "I loved Nottingham Forest and Brian Clough. Was it just me with my Fulham blinkers on? But did Thursday not bring back European memories of that era?" Wonk with a kind of pay-in to the cottages. Le Gaffe, Chelsea, have a look at your neighbours and take another look at yourself. That's how you perform against Italian opposition. Blue legend echoing your point, Sean, seeing Zamorano make Cannavaro look average does not bode well for Italy's World Cup hopes. Does Lippi really have no one better? Do you think this will force a rethink for Lippi regarding his old chums from 2006?
I don't think Cannavaro losing one of his legs would force Lippi into a rethink. I think Lippi is the most intransigent of the intransigent managers, and I think he will absolutely stick to his guns. And I think there's a lot of concern about that because there's a lot of old Juventus players in that team, and there's a lot of old players elsewhere in the league who are no longer at the levels they were, and Lippi seems intent on sticking with them.
I think this World Cup campaign has got Italy 1986 written all over again, squeeze through the group stages, get knocked out in the second round.
Well, there you go.
It looks like the Titanic orchestra, isn't it? They're all, okay, we're going to stay together and drown with the ship. That's what Lippi's doing. Let me hug the old chums and we're all going to die together, unfortunately.
Right.
I wouldn't quite go into South Africa and get knocked out in the second round dying unless they happen to be...
It's a metaphor, Sean Ingle.
Don't know anything about those.
You should know, of all people. Sean Ingle calling other out on analogy. Shocker. That's as ironic as... It's finding 10,000 spoons when all you need is a knife.
Hindsight will show that this Fulham performance was amazing. Of course, they're going to remember this forever, etc. But let's put this in perspective as well. It's a Europa League with a Juventus side that basically wasn't... No big club is actually trying to go to the final game, yes, and have the UEFA Cup or Europa Cup, whatever.
Do you think so?
In the arm.
Did you not see Liverpool? Liverpool quite excited, yeah. I think, by winning.
I think when we get to this point, I think that was one of the remarkable things about this last set of fixtures, the astonishing way in which teams were chasing results. I mean, I say astonishing, an entirely reasonable way in which they were chasing results. And it is a great, it was a great round, and there's a great set of matches in prospect. Benfica-Liverpool is going to be an interesting one.
There was just there's no attempt whatsoever from Juventus to play this down and say it's only the Europa League. They said beforehand, we want to win this competition, and afterwards they said...
I'm not saying that they basically didn't play well, etc. But the thing is, of course, this rewards a very fantastic job that Hodgson's doing at Fulham, but... Keep things in perspective. People start saying that Bob Zamora should play for England in something totally different, in my humble opinion.
Well, we'll hear more on Italy in a second or two when we have a quick look at the latest from Serie A and also catch up on the latest news from Brazil and cast our eye forward, not literally, that would be horrible, to the midweek action in the Premier League and FA Cup. So first off, though, a little musical interlude. European Sun posts in, says the Serie A review is a fun and happily anticipated part of the pod. Discussions of Serie A remind me of girls one knew at school. Some of them are not as good looking as they used to be, but you still remember the fun you had with them and wonder if it would be worth having another go for old time's sake. Yes, it would, European Sun. But try and avoid the Sunday night game because it's usually not that good. The other action's fantastic. Roma's great win over Udinese at the stadium.
I feel like the natural segue from that post is actually to mention that Ronaldinho was talking about his first kiss in Gazzetta on Sunday.
Oh, was he? What did he say about that then?
He said it was 11
years
old.
Did the girl need surgery? Or?
Apparently his friend organised it. Ooh. And he just went straight in for it because he was confident that she'd say yes.
Right.
But it went well, apparently.
He was some metres away at the time. Yeah. Anyway, right. Okay, now... Big news, Paolo, was Inter Saturday night, getting held in Palermo, 1-1 draw, fantastic backdrop, the Palermo Stadium.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great game, and it was, as you say, a fantastic backdrop. I mean, the thing with Palermo is Palermo had won 7 in a row at home. This was by no means that poor a result for Inter. It's just that in the context of their recent form, when they have, I can't remember how
many. 1 win in 7.
There you go, that's the number. They really needed a win, and they just come off this win against Chelsea, and they didn't get it. And of course, this meant that was on Saturday night. You had Milan 2 points behind playing at home to Napoli the next day, and they could go top of the league. So it was an incredible sort of reaction in all the papers. They were all calling it, one of them called it Milan Day, and Corriere dello Sport said this could be a historic day. And you know, there was a lot of hyperbole that was unnecessary, and people were pointing out that Milan hadn't been top for, I think, 504 days. But the thing is that what actually it did cast light is the realisation that actually... Of course, Inter aren't always top at the beginning of the season because you have that sort of beginning of the first few games where people are going up and down. But Inter have not been off the top of the table in the second half of a season for 4 years. So since Calciopoli, Inter have never been, after the midway point of the season, off first place. And this was the first time that it could have happened. And of course, Milan then blew it by drawing 1-1 at home.
And the defending on the Napoli goal?
It was brilliant. I mean, Massimo Otto managed to... basically fall on top of his goalkeeper so that there was no one in the middle to...
All the Milan back line, it was just astonishing to see a club that was built on some of the finest defensive traditions around. All four of the back line run to the same spot, leaving the rest of the field completely empty for Campagnaro to stroll in.
Yeah, and they could have conceded more. I mean, Milan could easily have lost that game with the way they were defending, and that is partly to do with injuries. Nesta's out and Bonera's out, and that means now they're playing Favalli at centre-back, which is just a disaster, and Massimo Oddo was playing at full-back, and Antonini and Abate were both on the bench, but they weren't fit enough to start, so there's a lot wrong at the back there for them, and yeah, it's not a great defence even when they're all there.
No, indeed not. Well, anyway, there you go. Inter still 1 point clear of Milan. Now, Inter are at Roma next weekend. Roma 4 points behind, but obviously taking on the leaders next weekend. Milan with Pato injured again, the third of the season. A lot of question marks over that. Nobody knows what's wrong with him. Roma have got Tony back. Totti might be back next weekend, so that's very exciting. Lisbon Exile, though, tweets in saying, could we have a lowdown on how Palermo are doing and the battle for fourth in Serie A? So Palermo maintaining fourth place, although Sampdoria...
Well, basically what's happened in the last sort of month and a bit is that every team that's got into fourth has instantly stopped winning as soon as they get into fourth. So Palermo have actually had a ropey couple of weeks now that they've got in there. I mean, their home form is still good. But no one's catching them either, because Juventus are falling apart at the seams.
Well, they've dropped to sixth
sort of,
with a defeat at Sampdoria.
Which I don't know if anyone mentioned. Cassano scored it wasn't
back
a brilliant
after
goal,
2 months out.
Yeah, he got his first start in a long time, and he basically scored from 30 yards out, but only because Chimenti, who you would have seen the Fulham game, managed to push it into his own net. Sean?
No, I just noticed that Lazio won, and we talked in midweek about Lazio having sort of meditation therapy.
Well, they were sent to a mountaintop retreat.
It took a twist, because on Friday, Tommaso Rocchi came out, who's one of their strikers, and said, we had a talk about it and decided we weren't going to use the sports psychologist, because it seems like the president, Lotito, said, we have basically hired this sports psychologist. And initially Rocchi said that, and it sounded like the players had also, they didn't want him. But then Eddie Reha, the manager, came out a little bit later, and he said basically something along the lines of, I won't have this meddling, it's the coach's job to inspire his players and bring them together, so I won't have anyone threatening my autonomy. So I suspect it was actually Reha who threw up a stink when he found out about the psychologist, and therefore it never happened. But they were off in a mountaintop retreat and training, and they did come back and won 2-0.
2-0 at Cagliari, although Cagliari have had four defeats in the last five. Oli Rosso Blu posting in saying how great they are, and we should talk more about Max Allegri, but not really the best
it's the wrong moment. They were great earlier in the season, and they'll stay up, but they're having a bad run.
Right, I know you want to talk more about it.
Does anybody know the odds for Rome winning the league? For Roma winning the league?
I don't know. You fancy that, do you? If Totti and Tony are batting, Vucinic scoring goals like that, the quality of
their recent run was bloody amazing. I think they had like 17 and 18.
I think they're now 18 unbeaten in the league or something like that. It's a big game next Saturday. Perhaps we'll find time to talk about that on Thursday.
One final add into the Cagliari point is just that, and Sean, I know he's already laughing at this, but the continuation of Serie A, but the president there, Cellino, said that he was going to refund everyone, all the home fans, if they lost, and they did. So that's about several thousand ticket prices to pay.
Yeah, they don't have big attendances at the Chandelier, but
not the biggest. But there's,
he says he wants to buy Fulham, apparently. Or there is this rumour that he wanted to buy West Ham, and he's now thinking of buying Fulham. There you go. Posts. I want Curly Head too, and Gavin as well. Both asking about Owen Hargreaves, who came back and played half of the reserves, was it, last week? And is there any chance he could get into the World Cup squad, Sean, very briefly?
Very, very slim. I think you'd have to lose a couple of central midfielders for him to be considered.
Right. Tukey Johnson says, can we ask Mr. Duachi how Brazilian teams are getting on in the Libertadores? Fernando?
At this point of the season, they certainly will qualify from their group. It's the first round, it's early days. I still think that, as usual, Brazilian teams will be, hyper-populating the quarterfinals and the semifinals as usual.
Right. How's Robinho doing at Santos?
He's fine. He didn't play this weekend. And as a matter of fact, Santos won 9-1. But, the whole group there is doing pretty well, especially Neymar, this guy there. He's supposed to be the new Robinho. He's being really well groomed by his father, who doesn't allow him to wear rings or blingy stuff. It's pretty interesting the work they're doing in Santos there.
That counts for being well groomed, does it, these days in Brazil?
It's a matter of having your feet on the ground, because as here, you have the Bentley babies in Brazil. Immediately, a player would buy like this very expensive car, sometimes roll downhill with him, like a player once did at Ronaldo for Flamengo. He destroyed a Mustang on the road, could have been killed. So some parents are trying to actually protect their offspring.
Will the rumoured £30 million move to Chelsea, will that have any effect on his groundedness, do you think?
If it happens, Who knows? But yeah. I think that after the Robinho debacle at City, a lot of Brazilian players will think twice before coming to England because...
Really?
Yeah. A lot of clubs will think twice before bringing Brazilian dynamos, etc. And also the players will see that this is not a place where they're going to be spoiled. The problem with Italy... And sometimes it's Spain, like Ronaldinho, for example, could say in Barcelona, is that the clubs tend to kind of like, okay, my little Brazilian genius, let me cut your head. In England, you don't do that, which in a way is much positive. On the other way, the players might get unsettled, which is the case of Robinho.
I think you're right generally in Italy, but obviously the one who isn't at the moment is Felipe Melo, and I was just wondering if there's any sort of thoughts different in Brazil on whether he's still going to be wanted by the national team, given that he's in a bad... Well, his form's actually been a little bit better for Juventus, but he's very unpopular at Juventus at the moment, and a lot of fans think he shouldn't be in the team. And yeah, dropped this weekend, and I don't know if that affects the thinking for the national team at all. Or
He's been doing really well for Brazil, and the thing with Dunga is that whoever seems to be loyal to him, he keeps on the side. He likes soldiers or players who will die for the cause. It's why Gilberto, the left-back who basically made a laugh of himself at Spurs, is still being considered to the World Cup because one of those players is going to throw himself on the front line, etc. It's a problem for Brazil. I think Melo, to be fair, has done very well against Argentina in the qualifiers. He's a guy who you need to give a second chance. But he's also a nutcase. So it's
why did you say that?
Because he used to be like one of those rebel boys when he was playing for Flamengo. There was always some kind of story involving him, you know, misbehaving. Compared to what happened with Ronaldo and the Transvestites, I think he's still right. Deserves a second
okay.
chance.
Speaking of Brazilian players behaving badly, one could run around. What about Adriano and Wagner Love? They're in trouble. Why?
Well, they basically went to a party in a favela called Chatuba where a lot of drug dealers were around there. But Adriano's girlfriend decided to crash the party and create a fuss, and they had a fight. She destroyed his car, and the whole thing escalated because apparently drug dealers were in the party. What people might have to remember is it's not that they're looking for the guys to do some kind of like Romanesque orgy. Some of those guys are probably guys that they knew from their youth days. Adriano's from a favela. Wagner Love also grew in a poor neighborhood. Some of these guys grew up with them. So some of these guys are guys like them. They see those people as people like them. And I don't blame them. I grew up in a mixed neighborhood in Brazil where basically you had like, you know, middle class houses and also slums. Some of the guys I used to play football with, these days they control the neighborhood, the neighborhood's dealings. Once one of them stopped me and across point to check the car and say, oh, how are you doing, man? You're right. Long time no see. And he had a massive gun on his waist.
He hadn't recognized you? This is a checkpoint. He would have, what, robbed the car or what?
No. He was just checking to see who was coming in.
Oh, I see. That kind of checkpoint.
Because my grandmother lives in a rough place near a favela. You don't have these distinctions. You don't get the ghettos in Brazil. Are not only in the outskirts of town. Sometimes you're going to have a fantastic luxury building in Ipanema, and pretty close you're going to have a slum. Yeah. So that's about you grew up with people. The way that they take different paths in life is just a matter of football working out. Who knows? I'm not saying that explicitly, but guys like Adriano, if they don't succeed in football, they might be basically with other black market options in the economy to actually chase. It's very easy to judge. I'm not saying that Adriano and Wagner Love shouldn't know better. In terms of actually, you know, remember what kind of implications their behavior might cause. But also, it's very easy to judge and say, oh, they shouldn't be there. Mm. Why? You know, are we not supposed to basically, you know, be friends of people who are not following the law? I don't know.
If you become a narco trafficker, I'm not going to turn my back on you, Fernando, after that lesson. I've revisited my perspective on the whole thing. Midweek in the crazy world of football, Spurs are taking on Fulham. In that FA Cup business, looking for a place in the semi-final. And Fulham, of course, fantastic cup performers last week. Do you think that they might have a chance of making the semis?
Of course they've got a chance, but you've got to favour Spurs. You know, really? They're at home.
Yeah. No Defoe, no Palachenko.
True, but Fulham are going to be stretched. They're playing, you know, two games a week at the moment. I think Spurs are rightly going to be favourites, but of course Fulham have got a chance.
All right, then. In the Premier League, meantime, there's a big game at West Ham against Wolves. Hey, West Ham just on the edge. You're frowning at me, Sean Ingle, but they're just on the edge of the relegation zone.
I haven't been that impressed with West Ham recently. Well, I have been with Wolves. Wolves are sort of playing more 4-5-1 now, and I think Kevin Doyle hasn't scored a lot of goals, but he certainly works hard for the team.
Well, they got a draw away at Villa at the weekend.
And they could have easily won, and it wouldn't shock me if they got something at West Ham, even though West Ham was on favourites.
They got relegated in 2003 with a much, much better squad than this one, didn't they? So
I think West Ham, certainly the weekend, I mean, you looked at it, and they just... against 10 men, you would have expected something. And it basically, you know, their entire attacking output came down to that penalty and then one turn by Carlton Cole that was basically just a really nice turn by him on his own and a shot that hit off the post, and that was it.
Biggest assets for the Hammers, arguably, in this final part of the season, Brian Laws and Ian Dowie, do you think? The fact that the two beneath them, and of course Portsmouth, who we'll maybe come on to in a second, seem to be incapable of actually shifting their teams out of the relegation.
Well, Dowie's only had one game as management,
that's unfair,
football management consultant.
Yeah.
But certainly Laws, we've talked on before, he's only won one match in the league. They actually played very well against Wigan, and they're a little bit unlucky to lose 1-0.
How about Ian Dowie with his glittering record while battling relegation, which has unveiled a new chapter with the defeat at Portsmouth?
Well, two goals from Jamie O'Hara and Kanu ensured it was a happy finish for Evan Grant's team. I can't imagine Portsmouth will stay up. I mean, they're 14 points off West Ham with 8 games left. And they face, say, Chelsea on Wednesday night, then Spurs and Blackburn in the next games after that. So I think they are.
Now, they're at home. Portsmouth are at home to Chelsea this Wednesday, is it? Yeah. And. Do you know, it's been an extraordinary series of performances for them in the face of all sorts of adversity. A little caveat, to use the buzzword, on that. Surely, you know, everyone's saying, isn't it amazing, you know, they're definitely going down, but they're still playing for it. Surely this is exactly the time when players really have to get a performance, when they need a transfer. They know their club's going to be falling apart in a matter of days. They desperately need a way out of there.
Well, that's true, and also because they're still in the cup as well, I think.
Yeah.
You know,
Can they cause Chelsea problems, do you think, midweek? This Chelsea team that seems to have lost its fire.
Of course they can. I mean, I wouldn't be back in Chelsea at 1.33, but I think Chelsea should win.
All right. Anyone else excited by that prospect? Portsmouth throwing a spanner in the Chelsea works? No?
You'd imagine that Chelsea will have a reaction as well after after not getting the 3 points of Blackburn. But, you know, Portsmouth are playing quite well, but I'd be surprised.
All right.
It would be lovely to see another former Chelsea manager kind of like putting a nail in their supposed coffins. It would be brilliant, especially because we all know that Grant was vilified for a job that wasn't that bad. The guy was one penalty kick away for winning the Champions League.
Absolutely.
And his captain fell on his ass and tried to blame the pitch for that. So
right. And he's been a remarkable figure, I think, at Portsmouth. Do you not think? As he's maintained a level of dignity and for the way that he has soldiered on through adversity, along with the Portsmouth players, and, urged them towards victory, indeed, this weekend. Be interesting, that game Wednesday at Fratton Park. Good. Despite everyone's eagerness to discuss that game and the other midweek fixtures, which include Villa, Sunderland, Blackburn, Birmingham and Man City, Everton. That's a big game. That's it for today. We'll be back on Thursday with our reaction to those fixtures and more. In the meantime, it's many thanks, Paolo Bandini.
Thank you.
And Sean Ingle.
Thank you.
Thank you and congratulations to Fernando Duarte.
Thank you. Always a pleasure, James.
And hello to baby Cecilia, producer Ben. Thanks a lot. You, the listener, especially big thanks and hugs to you. And we'll be back on Thursday.
Football Weekly with James Richardson in association with SportingBet.com.